Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on the game all across the metro from Alabama to South Carolina, Chattanooga to Macon on the Big Stick, WZGC, and, of course, worldwide if you have the app, and you can stream it on any smart device, radio.com. We know that on Friday, this Friday, we're going to get backed up over Hartsfield-Jackson here in about 20 minutes. We have a loaded lineup. Charlie Campbell of Walter Football will be first up. Tanitra will be here with Sweet Tea, Morgan Shaw Parker from the Atlanta Falcons, Pete Futak from College Football News, one of my favorite writers in the nation, and George Shea, who is the chairman of Major League Eating and their big event, all going to join the program. But we have a few minutes to take your calls and talk with you about television and the anticipation over the Michael Jordan documentary, which is coming up Sunday night at 9 o'clock, called The Last Dance. And you can weigh in at 404-741-0929. Or on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line, certainly on our Twitters at 929TheGame, at BigHugh53 or at John Fricke. And you can talk about Michael Jordan, or you can kind of expand it out because we're curious as to what you think anticipated television moments are. You know, and somebody, you know, again, we're not including, you know, breaking news or news in general or sports in general. We're talking about kind of scripted things because, you know, the most anticipated things, you know, are of all time were like the OJ verdict or the Apollo 11 landing. I mean, but those are, you know, news events and not necessarily, you know, scripted television. We're talking about, you know, who shot JR or last episode of Game of Thrones or, you know, how anticipated this Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, is on Sunday. A couple of replies on our Twitter, Hugh, from James Robinson. He says, not going to watch, talking about the MJ doc. Not going to watch it. Is there really anything we don't already know?
Yeah, it's a lot that you don't know. I saw that, and I'm like, what? You don't know MJ like you think you do. I mean, I don't know what you think you know or if you guys are buds or something, but I'm thinking to myself, nah, we don't know everything about MJ. He remains a mystery.
Yeah, I think there's an awful lot we don't know. And again, you know, setting aside, you know, what happened with his dad, I just think there's a lot about the man we don't know. I'm interested because he is such a, you used a really good word, Hugh, to describe him, transcendent, because he was a transcendent figure, not in basketball, but in sports.
And I tell you what, John, to hear that he was taking Usher's money at the game and he's making millions of dollars, that to me is fascinating. Like, he didn't care. I guess if you gamble, that's what you get when you're gambling, you know? But it just kind of fascinated me that, you know, he would know the odds and he would still bet on them, knowing the outcome of the picks of the halftime stuff or the stuff they would do in game, and still would take that man's money. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, right. I mean, he was that kind of guy, you know. I mean, always on the edge, doing things different his way. And we're going to find out a little bit more about the man behind the player and man behind, you know, I hope that this isn't going to be, you know, my anticipation for it is we're going to find out stuff we don't know, as opposed to just, oh, this is, you know, I didn't make my, you know, I got cut from my high school basketball team as a freshman, and I didn't, you know, okay. Well, those stories we kind of know. Rob weighs in on the Twitter, says, it's definitely going to deliver, as MJ did often. People are too young to remember. We'll actually get a chance to see how great he was. Yeah, it's, you know, it's like when Tiger had that interview the other day, and he was talking to Jim Nantz about winning the Masters last year and about how his young children, Sam and Charlie, only knew him as a YouTube player, because I think that's probably true. I mean, they saw him on YouTube. Oh, you used to be somebody, huh? And then when he won the Masters, they got to see him do something. It is a shame that, you know, of course, it's just natural, too, that, you know, people don't realize just how great MJ was and how transcendent he was and how he reshaped the NBA for David Stern, because David Stern kind of went out there and made a lot of changes to the game that made the game, I think David Stern was such a great commissioner, that allowed Michael Jordan to become Michael Jordan by making it a, you know, getting rid of the zone defense, making it a clear-out game, making a one-on-one game, and letting Jordan become Jordan.
But I'm curious, who don't know Michael Jordan can play? Because you know what's funny about Michael Jordan? Kids that I know for a fact did not see Jordan play know about Michael Jordan, and they have a tremendous amount of respect for him. That's the kind of transcendent player he was. They go on YouTube and like, you recognize his greatness. I know a lot of people probably only know Jordan from his shoes and I mean, realistically, they know him from his shoes, but Jordan was the type of guy that somebody in your family, even if you didn't know about him, told you about him. I mean, that's the kind of stories that people told about MJ. And then when you watch him on YouTube or you hear other people talk about him, you almost feel like you got a chance to see him play. That's the type of guy he is. I mean, you know, when you talk about just like the shoe thing is just a footnote in what Michael Jordan was.
Yeah, it's part of him, right? And, I mean, I guess you when you say transcendent, Hugh, and I don't know how we'd rank them, but I think of, you know, the athletes who are the greatest in the history of the world, all right, and in terms of their impact on, you know, the world at large. And to me, it starts with Muhammad Ali. I'm not sure Michael Jordan is a second. I mean, that's the kind of impact he had. I mean, in terms of in the history of the world, you know, bigger than life in so many regards. I mean, whether it was Space Jam or McDonald's commercials or the shoes or what he was able to do on the court, he was money, more so than anybody else. I mean, if there was going to be a shot to be made to win the championship, you knew he was making it. When he hit the shot over Craig Elo to win the championship, Craig Elo was like, what am I said one time, I knew he was making it. He knew he was making it. The world knew he was making it. What was I supposed to do? He was going to make it. He's Michael Jordan.
I tell you what, I think about, you know, the biggest one of Michael Jordan's biggest games is when he played when he had the flu. And I was just thinking, and I think somebody pointed this out, in this day and age, especially right about now, if he played with a flu game, that would just be called reckless at this point. why are you out there being so reckless? You're putting everybody's lives in danger. What are you doing?
What are you going full Rudy Gobert here? Don't do that, you know?
What are you doing, Michael? You're trying to kill us all.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, geez. I hadn't thought about that, but that was a famous game too. Yeah, so.
Yeah, that would be – nowadays, John, that would just be disrespectful, for real.
Right. you know, and so, you know, Michael, you know, as a second act, you know, one of the things that LeBron has done, I think, and brilliantly so, in terms of his impact as a, you know, not just an athlete, but as somebody else's, he's kind of set himself up. Today, maybe it's a little bit easier because, you know, you do have – streaming options that Michael Jordan didn't have back in those days. But I don't know that Michael Jordan would have wanted to be. Michael Jordan always struck me as somewhat reluctant to be, you know, that figure, even though he was. He was more of a private person as opposed to LeBron. LeBron has set himself up to have, like we would have expected from Kobe, sadly, a second life that is going to be impactful, large, you know, very public. Whereas Michael Jordan, after he, you know, he became an executive for a brief period of time, but has kind of, you know, shied away from public image a little bit. He's not as, you know, front and center as he probably could be.
A private person, and nothing is wrong with that. You know,
no.
I mean, and some guys have to have that personality to be able to do that. You know, so, I mean, he's just a different guy, John. Nothing's wrong with that. Everybody's life, everybody doesn't want their life played out for everybody to judge. And I think that's kind of like what Michael Jordan is. LeBron James is a person who's every move that he makes is being judged by somebody. He handles himself pretty well when you think about it. When you think about some of the stuff that he's backed and what he puts his name behind and all that other stuff, he's handling himself pretty well. Some people enjoy that. Some people can handle that. Some people don't like that. Some people don't want every move that they make judged by the masses.
No, absolutely. And some people don't. You know, I can't even imagine, Hugh, and you got a taste of this when you were a player. I certainly never have, and I can't imagine. I wouldn't want to be not able to go to have dinner at La Perea. You know, I mean, because Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, you know, those kind of people, LeBron, you could do it, but as long as you understand that everybody's pointing fingers, everybody's whispering, everybody's seeing, you know, that would bother me.
You know, I'm flattered that you think I had it like that, John, but I didn't have it like that. I mean, you know, being in Philadelphia, that was one thing, you know, going around, but it was never, I felt like there was nowhere that I could go. That has never been an issue for me. I mean, I felt like, you know, even though I did play professional sports, that I blended well. And, you know, I enjoyed the company that I was around at all times. They're on a different stratosphere when it comes to things like that. You know, whereas you can't hang out and just be, you know, chill. Like, I had a chance to be around Shaq a couple times since he's been here in Atlanta. Shaq's on a different level as far as his celebrity is concerned. Shaq can't do anything without somebody coming up to him asking him for an autograph or to take a picture or something like that. He's out to dinner or he's just out eating. Somebody's always trying to take a picture. They want to take a picture of his shoe size, his hand size, and things of that nature. I don't know what that feels like.
Yeah, I can't imagine that either. I mean, you couldn't just go to, like, you know, go to Vegas, for example, and go to, you know, go into the gambling hall at Caesar's Palace and play craps. I mean, you can't just do that as a normal person. No, the second, you know, you walk in, I mean, the table goes, you know, whoosh, you know, and 1,000 people are there, and they're all watching every move you make, and you got to be careful about how much you drink or do, because everybody's taking pictures. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's a huge trade-off. I couldn't imagine. You know, I have been blessed to be able to do what I'm doing now and play in the NFL, but I could not imagine being in a position where everything that I did, even when I thought I was relaxing, somebody's taking a picture or somebody's taking a video. Can you imagine that? Like, Shaq's probably been out to places where he's probably dozed off and somebody's taking a video of him dozing off. You know, hey, I caught Shaq sleep or whatever, you know, or you know, whatever it is. You know, he was at the urinal next to me and I shot a picture or whatever.
Right.
People do that. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So I couldn't imagine what that's like.
Yeah, no, I can't either. I can't imagine what it would be like to have that kind of celebrity and have to live with that, because it's not just that people want to take pictures of you, you know, because they're always aiming and angling. Hey, listen, can I make money off of this somehow? Can I catch him not sleeping, but slipping, you know, and suddenly you got something. Hey, TMZ, guess what I got? You know, I mean, so... even if it's just a minor thing, yeah, I can't imagine what it's like to live in that kind of a microscope, you know, that those guys like, you know, Shaq and Michael or Tiger. And I think this is one of the reasons that, you know, we go back to this, that Michael hasn't been a front and center guy. So when you say, you know, I think we already know about him, I think he's such a quiet, reserved person by nature that there's a lot we don't know about him. And so it's not like Michael has been a front and center guy. He's not on TV. He doesn't, you know, again, outside of Space Jam, he didn't do movies. He's not a public figure, really, for the most part. He's kind of, you know, he's receded back into it. And by the way, I don't blame him. I'm not mad at him. Don't get me wrong. I'm not criticizing him in any way. Which is why this could be kind of a fascinating look inside a true, to use the word is great, transcendent megastar. We mentioned we're a little backed up. It's going to be a lot of fun. Charlie Campbell from Walder Football. If you're a draft fan, a draft Nick, I highly recommend it. You should bookmark Walder Football. It is, well, if you go to it and just look at the menu, you'll see why. Walder Football is a truly phenomenal, and I use that word, it's a phenomenal site. Hey, now's the time to stay connected. It's date night for me and the Maven. We were just talking about it in the last break. You know, where are we going to order from today? Your neighborhood businesses that are open and delivering, including the Nook in Midtown, Grindhouse Killer Burgers, Cherry Street Brew Pub, Smoke Jack and Alpharetta, and more. If you want to add your name to the list, 929thegame.com/lovelocalatlanta. You can find the complete list there at 929thegame.com/lovelocalatlanta. Charlie Campbell, draft guru of Walder Football, next, live. What does he think about the Falcons? And more as we continue on this Friday with John and Hugh after a CBS Sports Minute. Hey, on the morning show for all of you out and about delivering and doing construction and generally keeping America running, we salute all of you, all you great truckers, you delivery drivers, you construction workers, among others. As we continue on 92.9 The Game, all over the Southeast on the Big Stick from Alabama to South Carolina, Chattanooga to Macon, and of course worldwide at radio.com. John and you, NFL draft 6 days away. We have huge coverage all next weekend. It actually kind of begins now. Let's talk a little bit about the NFL draft with one of my, and I mentioned this, you know, going into the break, Hugh. If you are a draft fan, if you are a football fan, Walder Football is someplace I've been going to for 20 years. I mean, as a bookmark on my site and now on my phone. Charlie Campbell, who is a draft analyst of Walder Football, joins us on the waitford.com hotline. Morning to you, Charlie.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
How you doing, Charlie? How you holding up?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm ready to get this thing rolling. You know, the NFL draft, feels like Christmas morning, so I can't wait.
Let's talk a little bit about that NFL draft, Charlie. I mean, first off, you know, most anticipated draft maybe ever because of the nature of what we're going through, and it is the big news. It's the only news going on right now, but also because of, you know, to be the most dissected draft, because of that great unknown. How much of this draft do you think is going to change because we have two great unknowns? You're doing a draft virtually for the first time. As Mike Mayock said, it's like back in 1976, and virtually, and so that's a great unknown. And the second great unknown is there are a lot of players out there that a lot of teams have question marks about because they couldn't get kind of the final answers prior to us getting a lockdown.
Yeah, I mean, it's really going to be interesting to see how this whole situation impacts the draft and where players go and where who they land with and all of that. Because, like you said, it's such an unprecedented situation. And I kind of surveyed teams and asking scouts. And, you know, it's weird for them, extremely weird for them because most of the team scouts aren't with the team. You're going to have the general manager not have the scouting staff with them. When most scouts don't live in the NFL city of the team that employs them. They're all spread out all around the country. So they cover different regions. So they live in that region, and then they fly to the team for meetings, draft meetings, other things, and are there for the draft, obviously. So they're all at home. But, you know, in kind of surveying them, they think that overall this could help the players that are viewed as kind of safer guys, guys without off-the-field issues, guys without medical issues. The guys with medical issues, this could hurt more than typically because you don't have the opportunity to get them in your own team facility, have your doctors check them out in April, give a thumbs up and say, yeah, we're looking pretty good. And then you don't have the opportunity for them to work with the coaches and have a private workout and have the coaches advocate for taking the player. So this really, you know, hurts the guys with question marks.
We're talking to Charlie Campbell, Walter Football Draft Analyst on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game on the WayForward.com hotline. Charlie, I got a question for you. I know that the NFL was going to do first time ever they were going to have this HBCU draft. Well, this HBCU combine where they were going to, you know, work out some of these guys who didn't get invited to the combine. How do you think with everything being the way it is right now, how is it going to affect those guys and their potential of getting drafted this year?
Well, you know, I think that that those guys will still be in play if teams, have them as draftable. I think this is also going to help some of the guys that were in the XFL as far as after the draft being signed over, undrafted free agents from the college ranks because, as you know, when you get hit training camp, especially with less of an off-season program, teams like veterans who kind of know how to practice and know the flow of practice. So the XFL guys are going to kind of have a leg up on the undrafted college players in terms of, you know, being signed to some of those final roster spots for the 90 guys. So that's the other impact of this that I think is kind of going under the radar, that the leftovers of the XFL, you'll see more guys get signed after the draft.
Talking with Charlie Campbell, Walter Football, again, walterfootball.com. So let's talk about the Falcons. They're sitting at 16. What do you think the Falcons do? There's rumors about trading up. Do they have designs on a defensive tackle in Javon Kinlaw? Do they have designs on an edge guy like Caleb Von Chason? Or are they going cornerback with C.J. Henderson? What do you see the Falcons doing?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, I think they could do all of those, but given what I'm hearing, it sounds mostly like cornerback is the preference among those, that's the position that they would like. That's what people around the league are saying, and you don't know if misinformation is being let out on purpose, but I would think that makes a ton of sense after cutting Desmond Trufant. They could really use that number one corner for Raheem Morris's defense. And I know Raheem Morris well, and he is a phenomenal coach. I think he's going to do a great job there in Atlanta as the defensive coordinator. He runs all kinds of multiple things in coverage. So having that one shutdown corner on one side of the field really allows him to be creative with what he does with the other defensive backs and how he employs them, how he uses a double team on other players. So if he has that number one corner that he can put on an island, have the rest of the guys move into zone or play quarters, he'll just do a lot of different things. I saw him do that in 2010 with the Bucks when they won 10 games, and he was the head coach and defensive coordinator, and he had Aqib Talib playing at a really high level at that point. And that defense really lacked talent up front. And that secondary, through the coverage and the variety that Raheem used, they really gave offenses problems and were able to kind of mask some of the issues they had up front. So I think you give Raheem Morris a number one corner, he's going to do some really excellent things there in Atlanta.
That's interesting. We're talking to Charlie Campbell, Walter Football Draft Analyst on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. That's one of the rumors that's been out there that's been flying around. There are some other ones. You know, this is the time of year where there's a lot of rumors out there that people are speculating about this, that, and the third. But what are some of the ones that might actually be true?
Well, you know, there's always going to be some misinformation that gets out there. But, you know, of the things that I think might actually be true, I could see the Broncos, from what I've heard, they might not trade up from 15, as some have speculated, but they might trade back into the first round because they have a plethora of day two picks. So don't be surprised if Denver is really active. I've also heard that Miami, this one kind of gone under the radar. Everyone talks about them potentially trading up from number five. But I've heard from people with the Dolphins that, you know, when they acquired all those picks, that wasn't really the plan to move up high in the first round, but they might be more active after that. In fact, they might look to move back into the top 10 and packaging their two first-round picks at 18 and 26 because they have a huge hole at offensive tackle. There's a big drop-off after that first four. And their general manager also happens to be really close friends with Kirby Smart, so I've heard they really like Andrew Thomas as well. So they might grab a quarterback and then try and jump back up to get an offensive tackle to protect them.
Charlie, we appreciate you taking a few minutes. As mentioned, I am a huge fan of your site. I've been reading Walter Football for nearly two decades. I think the information there is phenomenal, and appreciate you taking a few minutes to join us this morning. Thanks.
Oh, great talking with you guys, and I always loved watching Hugh play. Man, that was fun, a fun sight. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks. Thank you. Thank you for watching. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. Charlie Campbell of Walter Football. WalterFootball.com, one of the great resources. If you're a draft fan and you want some insight, I highly recommend you check out Walter Football at WalterFootball.com. Mentioned that we are kind of loaded in this morning. It's going to be a busy run to 10 o'clock this morning. Charlie kind of kicked it off. We'll get a little sweet tea around the corner in the 9 o'clock hour. Morgan Shaw Parker from the Falcons. Pete Futak, college football news insider, and get his thoughts on the draft and about college football right now. And George Shea, the chairman of Major League Eating. Yeah, they're going to have a big eating thing that starts at 7 o'clock tonight. Well, it's a eating competition, you know, Joey Chestnut and those people. We'll walk you through that, too. Hey, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game is helping you stay connected. John and here reminding you, you can listen to 92.9 The Game at home or on a smart device, Android, tablet, smart TV, by using the radio.com app. Downloading the app is simple. You go to the App Store, type in radio.com. Download the free radio.com app, and you can listen to 92.9 The Game anytime, anyplace. For more, go to radio.com/stay connected. One of our favorite segments that we do Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 8:40 is Sweet Tea with Tanitra when she has all these fun stories, and we'll do that next with John and you on the morning show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yes, yes, it is a happy Friday indeed. So we got a lot of stuff to cover this morning, so I'm going to start up in New York. You know, every day lately has become bring your dog work today. You'll see pictures all across social media. I know they kind of make you smile. So, well, they obviously work for Giants head coach Joe Judge as well. It's his new normal to bring his dog, his golden retriever, Abby, to the basement at his home where they spend up to 15 hours a day working. So Abby, of course, doesn't add much to the combo aside from maybe a bark or two. Apparently, Saquon Barkley's her favorite player. That's when she barks the most. But she's become sort of a Giants draft insider. So I guess whenever Coach Judge is really drilling down into what they're going to do for the draft, that's when she gets to be her most animated. And he said in a conference call to reporters on Wednesday, right now, Abby could probably tell you more about who we're going to take in the first round than anybody else. So that got me to wondering if anybody knows if Thomas Dimitroff or Dan Quinn's dogs, assuming they have dogs, are barking, I don't know, for say, Javon Kinlaw, Kalavon Chaisson, or PJ Henderson.
We hope so. I mean, that's the only thing that we can do. We can just hope that that is the case.
Right. Any way we can get insider info, right?
Well, yeah, that's it. I'm saying, because nobody knows at this point what they're trying to do or what they plan on doing or whatever. So, yeah, we hope so.
Hey, to Hugh's point here, Ian Rappaport, I just sent this out. Ian Rappaport has tweeted in the last hour, I had a general manager tell me, quote, the media is wronger about mock drafts this year than you guys have ever been before. Point being, players are going to be taken in places no one expects.
It's always like that, John. It's always like that. So, you know, that does not surprise me at all.
Yeah, and last year, I don't know, it seemed particularly fun. It was almost like right around that 2-3 spot, which is what a lot of pundits are saying this year as well, is where you're going to see the shift one way or the other, whether that's O-lineman, wide receiver, quarterback, or what have you. I remember last year, it was almost like, you know, at that point we're up at Flowery Branch and we're able to cover in person the draft. And it was like, let the games begin. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I know that our station has full coverage on the draft starting on Thursday with college football game time. But it's going to be really interesting to see how this whole thing unfolds as far as the virtual draft. And, you know, like the tweet that you just mentioned, John, how things are going to shift, how early and then, you know, how often and where the dominoes fall from there. So, I always love to tell you guys a story as well on what's going good in these coronavirus epidemic street or pandemic streets. Greg Popovich delivered a powerful message in a conference call with a group of local workers who needed it more than most earlier this week. Pop, ever quick, of course, with a dig and a quip publicly, dug into his very private arsenal of stories from some tough games to provide the staff at the San Antonio Food Bank with a vital takeaway on how to weather a crisis. So Pop dialed in with that food bank after those volunteers had fed 10,000 households at a drive-through on the city's south side. That's the most the food bank had ever distributed. And then Popovich actually took questions, including why he benched Tim Duncan in a critical game way back in the day. So shout out to Popovich for, of course, him doing this quietly, didn't want any pomp and circumstance, but ultimately something great and incredible that he did for the San Antonio Food Bank workers.
Yeah, I heard that story, and I heard that those people were tired. They had been working very, very long. And whatever story he told, it was exactly what they needed to hear. That was the cool thing about it, because it was exactly what they needed to hear at a time where they were very, very weary.
Yeah, it is, you know, it was a case where another, you know, athlete or another sports figure has stepped up in what has been kind of a, you know, roundly you know, across the sports world, you know, and the latest being in town, we talked about it yesterday, the Atlanta Pledge that the Hawks have put together to help the food bank here, the community food bank, and help the homeless shelters as well. So, yeah, I'm very impressed with, again, how sports responds to these kind of things. Athletics is always at the forefront and should make you, if you're a sports fan, pretty proud of what these leagues and the athletes and coaches and owners and whatnot are able to do.
This is true.
Absolutely. And here's a fun fact for you guys, straight out of Major League Baseball. On April 17th, 1956, you're thinking, okay, typical opening day, but apparently it was like no other in Major League history. So starting in left field for the then Redlegs against the Cardinals in Cincinnati was Frank Robinson, while 21-year-old Luis Aparicio got the nod at shortstop for the White Sox against the Indians in Chicago. And in Brooklyn, the Dodgers brought right-hander Don Drysdale out of the bullpen in the ninth inning against the Phillies. All three were making their major league debuts, but of course what makes that so special is that all three were also elected to the National Baseball Hall of Fame, which makes this April 17th, 1956, the only day to see three future Hall of Famers play their first big league games. How amazing is that?
That's pretty dope.
Yeah,
no
pretty
question
dope.
About that. That's pretty exciting.
I thought that was pretty cool as well. And you think about Robinson, the first player to win the MVP award in both leagues, became the MLB's first African-American manager in 1974. Aparicio made the All-Star team 10 of his 18 seasons, 9 Gold Glove awards, and Drysdale, of course, went 209 and 166 with a 2.95 ERA, 2,486 strikeouts over 14 seasons. So, yeah, quite an opening day for those guys, and especially when you think about it being the only day to see three future Hall of Famers play their first big league games on the same day. And speaking of somebody that had a big league day, this would have been his draft day. I just love that Tom Brady still looks for something to motivate himself 20 years later. Tom Brady won 6 Super Bowl titles during his NFL career, or has won 6, because who knows where it might go in Tampa. You never know. In which he has clearly become the greatest of all time. He's a 3-time NFL MVP, countless divisional titles, even a Comeback Player of the Year award. But TB12 is still clearly not forgotten about where he was picked in the 2000 NFL draft. That, like I said, that's something that pushes him to this day. He reminded everyone on Thursday, the 20th anniversary to the day, when the Patriots used a 6th-round pick, 199th overall to be exact, on the Michigan QB. So he literally tweeted out the names of all the people that went, all of the 2000 QB draft class that went before him. And I got to give you guys these names because it is hilarious to kind of look back. Some of them, I'll be honest with you, I can't even remember they existed. But Chad Pennington, Giovanni Comati, Chris Redmond, T. Martin, Mark Bolger, Spurgeon Wynn, and then there's Tom Brady. Nope, I haven't forgot is what his quote in his tweet ended with. Classic Brady, but seriously, gotta admit, those are some wild names and some forgettable names that went before him in the 2000 NFL draft.
I remember T. Martin and Mark Bolger. Those are the two names that I remember because I think Bolger played for the Rams and was a backup for Kurt Warner at one point, and he was supposed to be the heir apparent. Yeah, outside of that, yeah, it's pretty. But see, that's the beauty of the draft. You just never know,
right?
You never know who's gonna play.
And Spurgeon Wynn was a great college player too, and T. Martin took his team to a national championship at Tennessee, and Tom Brady, and the fact is that in college, because I remember watching Tom Brady play a number of games in college, Tom Brady was okay, but that's all he was. He was just okay.
Just okay.
And it would be like, you know, suddenly, you know, 20 years from now, we're talking about, I'll use another Michigan quarterback, Shea Patterson. Can you believe Shea Patterson drafted in the 6th round? Well, because at Michigan, Shea Patterson was just okay. You know, I mean, that's what Tom Brady was. When he was in college, he was just okay. Dan Marino dropped in the draft because there were questions about his, you know, personal life, but he also had a terrible senior season at Pitt. So, yeah, that's the thing with quarterbacks. You can never, ever know. Or otherwise, let's say 22 teams that were drafted before the Green Bay Packers passed on Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, you best believe he ain't forgot that either. He definitely
that's what
ain't
I was
forgot
gonna
that.
Say. He may not tweet anything out, guys, but you know that stays on his mind, motivates him every season, and that's why he gives us the product he gives us on the
that's
field.
What makes.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, not a problem. Have a good one, sweet tea.
Yeah, I do appreciate
thank you
it.
You guys, could, too. Thank you. All right.
Follow her on Twitter, at Tanitra Batiste. She's a great follow and, of course, a tremendous news anchor as well. And she's here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with Sweet Tea at 8:40. Well, Brett Favre was a 2nd-round pick. Drew Brees was a 2nd-round pick. Yeah, you know, it's just – it's hard to know. I mean, we know this, that of those 5 top quarterbacks, and there are others, Hugh, but of those 5 top quarterbacks of Burrow and Herbert and Tua and Eason and Fromm and Jordan Love, 6. Of those 6, 2 will become stars, 2 will be okay players, and 2 will be busts. Now, you take your pick.
Yeah, but that's not a given either, John, because we don't know. The thing about all of this, you can have all the talent in the world, but you have to be motivated. And we see with Tom Brady's tweeting out these. I respect his petty, by the way, what motivates him. What motivates him is striving to be the best and working hard.
Yep, yeah, the whole TB12 thing, which is, you know, say what you like about it, but it has contributed to one true factor of him, that's longevity. So it must work because, the man's going to be playing until he's in his mid-40s. And that is, you know, he's setting kind of a new standard. I mean, there have been players, Hugh, George Blanda back in the day, who played to you know, into his mid-40s, but not at this level. You know, that's what's different about this, is that if he goes down to Tampa and takes them to a Super Bowl, oh my God.
Yeah, that's gonna be pretty special. Hopefully yeah, that's not the case though.
Yeah. Well, me too. Well, we mentioned we are kind of packed in, but it's a good packed in the 9 o'clock hour. Morgan Shaw Parker, very latest on how you can snag a jersey and more. We'll talk with her, VP of the Atlanta Falcons. Talk to her a little bit about this virtual draft, too, what she thinks of it. Pete Futak, College Football News, one of my favorite writers in America, weigh in on college football and some of the big stories. He's got a couple of great columns up right now at collegefootballnews.com. And George Shea, who is the chairman, commissioner of Major League Eating, on their big event tonight that they're going to be putting on YouTube Live. All right, that's all ahead in the 9 o'clock hour with John and you on Sports Radio 92 on the game.